Did you say that train has sailed? I just want to make sure.
I meant ship has sailed.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
But thank you for showing up on the show just to embarrass me.
I'm not going to embarrass you.
Oh, hey.
You
know,
This is the Fantasy Focused Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focused Baseball. It's a beautiful Wednesday morning, July 19th, 2017. I am Eric, he is AJ Mass, and man, we have got a lot to discuss today between the trades and the injuries and the promotions. AJ, this might be a longer than normal show. I hope you're okay with that.
Why, did something happen yesterday?
I don't think so. You know, it was a nice Tuesday, sunny outside. Didn't notice anything. Oh, Starling Marte returned. Yes, it was a big day.
That was
big
it, yeah.
Big day yesterday. Big day yesterday. All right, let's get right to the buzz. And you know, like, I write a daily blog entry, and half the time you're the unfortunate one who has to edit it. And I was thinking, oh, Starling Marte will lead for Wednesday, right? I mean, he's coming back from the 80-game suspension. I mean, what important thing could push that aside? Well, we have two major trades. We have a major injury. Oh, and the top prospect got promoted. So let's start with the trades here. And the first one that happened was J.D. Martinez was sent by Detroit to Arizona for pretty much nothing. Prospects who I don't even think they're going to matter that much in the future, which isn't our problem. It's for a different show. But this seems like a trade to me, AJ, where not a whole lot changes in fantasy because Martinez is already a top 10 outfielder. He'll probably get even a little bit better in Arizona. Nobody gets pushed aside in Arizona unless you were waiting for Yasmani Tomas, and there's nothing exceptional in Detroit to replace him.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, unless you were playing in a very deep league and we're utilizing Chris Herman and Daniel Descalzo in left field, then maybe this impacts you. But no, I mean, Martinez was playing. He will continue to play. Givaducci might get some time in Detroit. But generally speaking, the power players in this move, which was clearly a move made simply because of the business of baseball, the Tigers get more from this prospect package than they would. They got compensation for J.D. Martinez leaving via free agency. And that's really the only reason they made the deal.
All right, and I think we should just move on. I'm not sure what else there is to discuss there. Again, nobody on the Tigers in the minor leagues coming up to play right field that'll really matter, I don't think. If you were still waiting for Yasmani Tomas, it's not a good idea. The other trade was a little bit bigger. Todd Frazier, David Robertson, and Tommy Canley going from the White Sox to the Yankees for a good outfield prospect who, again, won't matter this season in fantasy, along with Tyler Clippard, whose inclusion in this trade might seem to be superfluous, and you might think, why do the White Sox want him? Well, I bet the Yankees made the White Sox take him. But what's interesting about this to me is, all right, Todd Frazier having a terrible year, batting .207. I don't think that changes much in New York. But David Robertson goes from being a potential top 10 closer to being obvious waiver bait, and you might want to actually pick up Clippard for him because I think he might get the saves.
Yeah, isn't it crazy?
To me.
I mean, Robertson, you know, basically now goes from being a guy who you definitely and your bullpen in fantasy to a guy who's going to be the setup man to the setup man in New York. No value at all, really, in terms of fantasy. You know, yeah, he'll still help your ratios the way he would have otherwise, but it's ridiculous. And I definitely think that Clippard gets the saves in Chicago. I mean, Swarzak probably gets the next save or two chances simply because he's there, and they're showcasing him. They'll trade him, too. I don't think he'll be with the team next week.
Yeah, that would be the smart move, because if you're smart enough to move Tommy Canley, who had never shown these skills before, he was always a big walker, strikeout guy, but, I mean, high whip, couldn't get enough outs. Swarzak's not that much different. This is a very surprising season. He's still a middle reliever. I think Clippard is going to end up, you know, and like Robertson wasn't saving like Greg Holland was saving games. I mean, Robertson's on pace for 23. So if you get 10 saves out of Tyler Clippard the rest of the year, that's still probably 10 more than David Robertson is going to get. And I own Canley in a league, and I was thinking, oh, good, Robertson got traded. What? He's in it too? Because Canley would have been the closer. But, you know.
Pretty much, yeah.
Alas, that's not what happens there. So Tyler Clippard's having a terrible year, and he probably won't even pitch well enough to keep the job. And you could see Dan Jennings get a save or two to the lefty, I suppose. But Dan Robertson, just go and cut him. I think he might actually supplant Betances for the eighth inning because Betances is walking people like crazy. But now the Yankees have huge depth there in their bullpen. If they can make it into the playoffs, you know, you've got an elite home run hitter and you've got a great bullpen. So, you know, the Royals won a World Series anyway. I digress. Todd Frazier, your thoughts. And please discuss for a points league and for a standard league, because they're very different here. The 207 batting average is a major, major problem in a standard league. It's like owning Baltimore's Chris Davis or Keon Broxton. I think it's a killer at this point. But in a points league, is he different? Is he more valuable? What do you do with him?
Yeah, he's absolutely more valuable because he doesn't strike out to the level that a lot of other people do, and he walks a lot. So whatever strikeouts he does have, it's mitigated by the high walk total. It's not quite a wash, but it's close enough to being a wash that, you know, his average, it's not going to kill you. You don't really care about the batting average. He's getting out, he's getting out. The home run should still be there, and the run scored, the RBI probably will be a little bit higher, you know, for when he does connect with the ball, because the Yankees lineup is better. So I can see him definitely being a top 75 hitter for the rest of the season. I had him there anyway. I don't think he moves up too much in that regard, but he certainly doesn't drop off as I think he might have had he survived the fire sale, although that was never really going to happen.
And he's available in 28% of ESPN Standard League. So people have moved on from Todd Frazier, and maybe this will get them interested again. I just don't see a whole lot changing. It's a shame. He used to be a really valuable fantasy player. He was a top 25 player when he hit 275 and stole 20 bases, because corner infielders don't generally do that. But now I just don't see much changing here. So I guess be careful. Like, I could make the case, AJ, that I'd rather own for the final 2.5 months Yoan Moncada over Todd Frazier. Can you make that case?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially just from the potential standpoint, you know, shiny new toys notwithstanding, I can totally make that case. But Frazier in a points league, I would rather have over Evan Longoria. You know, it's a different scoring system, and I think the power numbers will prove out for him. But, yeah, I mean, Moncada just – just let's see what he can do. Just the potential there for him to, like, have a 2 month stint in that Judge Bellinger, you know, kind of style. It's certainly plausible. So why not?
So Moncada down at AAA Charlotte was batting .282. A lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts, 12 home runs, 17 steals. Now, the White Sox are going to play him at second base. He's not eligible at second base in ESPN Fantasy Leagues, and we're getting a lot of tweets about this, and you can whine all you want, I don't care. The bottom line is, he played in the major leagues last season, and he played third base for Boston in 5 games. That's why he's eligible there. The eligibility in ESPN Leagues, it's pretty simple, it's never changed. 10 games, it's the most games from the preceding season, or 10 games in season. Moncada played at third base last year, doesn't matter what he did in the minors. So you're going to have to wait 10 outings at second base, and then the next morning he should be eligible at second base, and you can use him at middle infield. I think he's going to be most helpful in ESPN Fantasy Leagues for the stolen bases. I want to see where he bats. Probably bats first or second in the lineup, I would think, and they should let him run, and he'll get on base. There's also, I think, there's a risk here that he's Keon Broxton for batting average because of the strike. I mean, right? I mean, that could be. You know, he's a switch hitter. And he shouldn't be as overwhelmed here by right-handed pitching. I mean, he could be a 2020 guy, or but he could also hit .210. That's the risk.
Yeah, well, certainly. There's a risk involved at any time we get these prospects coming up. They're not all going to be Trout. They're not all going to be Harper. They're not all going to be Judge. They're not all going to be Bellinger. And, you know, we're going to get some prospects who come up and struggle. But having said that, I think because steals are so scarce this year, and you know, why not put him at the top of the lineup, like you said, especially because you want to get him more at bats. You know, it's not even just a DFS thing where, you know, you look to the top of the order. Why not put him at the top of the order and get him more at bats since the clock has already started on him?
And by the way, stolen bases was the category was hurt a little bit last night because Cameron Maben, who never gets hurt, hurt his knee on a stolen base attempt. He's only fourth in the major leagues in stolen bases, and he was leading off for the Trouts in Los Angeles. And now he's on the disabled list for the next couple of weeks. So, I mean, that puts the stolen base category even more peril. Now, the Angels will probably use Ben Revere. They may not lead him off, Ben doesn't seem to be running very much, even when he gets on base, though. So I don't think Ben Revere is a really suitable replacement here for Maven or Eric Young Jr. if they recall him again. So I'd say be careful there. You can do better. You know, get a power guy. Get my car.
Yeah, unfortunately, the way Ben Revere's been playing this season, it's none if by land, none if by sea.
Nice. I like what you did there. And isn't it amazing? Because, like, Ben Revere used to be, I mean, he stole 49 bases in 2014 and batted 306. That skill set, and even the following year, he stole bases, he hit for average, and then all of a sudden he was done with Washington in 2016, and he still looks done. It's kind of amazing how he just stopped playing well. You know, you don't really expect that. I mean, stolen bases generally don't translate into the 30s, and he's 29 years old, but still, like, it just seems like he's hit a wall, and that's it.
He has, and I don't think it's going to change. I mean, even if he bats at the top of the order, I mean, you don't want to run yourself out of innings, too. So I don't think he's going to really steal as much as one might think, even if he has some sort of resurgence.
I'm kind of curious, as a Yunel Escobar owner, if he goes back to the leadoff spot. He's actually hit better in the cleanup role. We're batting fifth now that they have Trout back, and they push him back one. But I just want to see what the Angels do with their lineup starting today against a really tough opponent, which we'll get to a little bit later on. The big injury, of course, on Tuesday was Houston Astros shortstop Carlos Correa. Now, if I hadn't looked, I would have said that Correa was the number one shortstop on ESPN's full-season player rater. He's third. Do you know the two guys ahead of him?
Oof, do I know the two guys ahead of him? That's a very good question. Because a player rater is one of these things that it factors in relationship just in the main categories. But, I mean, he would be number one on my list. I mean,
big speed.
Yeah, it's,
you know, Elvis?
Well, Elvis is second. So the guy that's number one on the player rater, and he might keep it for a while longer. He's on the disabled list, too. It's Trey Turner. You're right. Like, it gives him so much credit for his stolen bases. I mean, he had a ton of stolen, but he had like 20 in his like last 20 games before he got hurt. It gives him so much credit for the stolen bases and the runs scored, but like the steals more than anything else. Like Carlos Correa, here's another thing. Like, he's been Machado-ing us this season. He has nary a stolen base attempt. Like, I understand. Right? I mean, that's like the Machado year. At least Machado was 2 years ago. At least he tried to run, like, I think, what, four times in April, wasn't successful, so he just gave up. That's really what you want to teach your kids. If you can't do it early on, just stop trying. Don't even try. Machado had 20 steals in 28 attempts in 2015. In 2016, he was 0-for-3, and he's like, the final 5 months, I don't need to do this anymore. I'll just hit for power. But Correa, you know, we knew when he was going to bat third that he probably wouldn't steal a ton of bases, but, I mean, he stole 27 his first two seasons and no attempts. I mean, even pitchers have attempted steals. Anyway, I digress. He's out 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, Brian McCann has been more productive at steals.
I bet there are pitchers who have stolen bases this season, right? Carlos Ruiz stole a base last night, the old catcher on the Seattle. Well, he'll always be a Philly to me. 6 to 8 weeks with a torn ligament in his left thumb. And I liken this to the Mike Trout injury in that it's the same injury for one. Trout came back and he was fine. Correa should be back the first week of September. But this is a different situation, AJ, because the Astros are obviously going to the postseason. They don't need to push him the way the Trouts needed to push them because the Angels may not make the playoffs. So, I mean, I can ask you when you think he's coming back. We have no idea. But if you own Correa in a fantasy league, just don't drop him. Don't give up on your season. First of all, he's only a four-category guy, unlike Trout, who's a five. There are shortstops out there. Am I crazy to say that in an ESPN standard league, the depth on the free agency at outfield is no better than the depth at, say, middle infield or shortstop?
Yeah, probably. I mean, especially because of the five outfielders that are out there that you need on your lineup. You know, you get a lot deeper, even though there are more. That 5-to-3 ratio really cuts into the outfield pool much deeper than you would at shortstop and middle infield in general. I think Correa will be back in September. I mean, let's just all assume that, which is why you don't cut him, because there's still playing time left. I mean, unless your league goes to the playoffs like right first week of September and you don't think you're going to make it if you have that zero from the roster spot, you know, maybe you take a last-ditch effort and try to go that route. But, you know, otherwise, keep him around, and if you're playing in September, then, you know, he's going to contribute. I think the Astros are at least better suited to deal with an injury like this than most teams because they have Marwin Gonzalez, who can pretty much step in anywhere they need him in the infield, and he's been playing anyway on the regular. So I yeah, it hurts, but it doesn't hurt as much as it would hurt any of the other contending teams. The other thing that this injury does, which is, I think, really key for fantasy owners, is that it probably means they'll bring Keuchel back a lot sooner. He was probably going to come back next week, but they were saying, maybe not. We'll wait and see. But because they lost Korea, they probably will bring Keuchel back to at least solidify the rotation and not have to worry about the negativity of, we're losing Korea, Keuchel's not back. I think they'll bring him back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And by the way, if you need a pitcher who's probably going to get wins, Colin McHugh should come off of the disabled list later this week and replace Joe Musgrove, who I guess I was just wrong about. I had him on a couple teams. He was terrible. Now he's going to the bullpen. Minor league numbers don't always translate, folks. When you look at minor league numbers and you say, wow, this guy's going to be a future ace, well, maybe Joe Musgrove still will be, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen this season. I'm very interested in Houston's lineup because Correa was their number three hitter. Last night it was Josh Reddick. I think Yuli Gurriel might get a shot here, and he's been hitting. He slugs, and he's available in some leagues. So keep an eye on the Astros. And Alex Bregman could also pick up some shortstop eligibility, which could matter in a lot of leagues, middle infield eligibility. I think he's going to hit as well. Let's talk about replacements here. I'll name guys and you say yay or nay. How about that?
Sure.
Paul DeJong of St. Louis, 7 homers in the past month.
Why not take the shot at him while he's hot? I mean, he's been a very hot pickup. A lot of people are taking chances with him, and he's playing now, and he's not going to not play if he continues to hit like this. I'd certainly ride him for a few weeks and see where you are.
The shortstop for your Mets. He's also eligible at third base. I try not to say the names of people who have done bad things, but, that train has sailed.
Train's on sale. He's for the last few weeks. I'm just saying, there's no reason he should still be on the Mets. There really isn't, but then no one's taking him. So, I would take him for maybe a two-week flyer, but I would not spend any FAAB on him.
Eric, real quick, did you say that train has sailed? I just want to make sure.
Ship has sailed.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
But thank you for showing up on the show just to embarrass me. I appreciate
it. To embarrass you.
That's okay.
At least when you're dealing with the Astros, they do have the train in the outfield. So.
The Mets are so dysfunctional, they might have train sailing.
They might. You have no idea.
And by the way, I wasn't talking about Astrubal Cabrera, who there's a rumor is getting traded as well. He's got more value, I think, than Reyes does. Anyway.
Yeah, and he actually demanded a trade earlier. So.
And that always works out well. Freddie Galvis, who has been batting second lately. He's got some pop. Generally hurts the batting average, but not lately. And he can steal a base. Freddie Galvis. Freddie Galvis versus Paul DeJong, who would you rather have?
Well, in points leagues, Galvis. In other leagues, probably not. He's one of the few Phillies bats. Well, I guess I like Franco too a little bit in terms of outside the top 100, but guys I would consider taking depending on how deep my league is. So, probably more than the other guys in points leagues, but not so much in Roto.
What about Orlando Arcia? He's been hot of late. It's a high batting average recently, which we don't expect to continue based on his walk and strikeout skills here. Bats at the bottom of an order. But he had 3 stolen bases, and Sunday or Monday, one of those days. But he hasn't really run a lot.
Yeah, and that's category specific. If you need steals, take the shot on him. In points leagues, the KBB rate is way too high for him to really have an impact, and he probably hurts you more than he helps. One of the players, he's in my top 200 for hitters, but that's really just because of the steals. And if he didn't strike out as much, he'd be a lot more valuable.
And, Turner's replacement in Washington is Wilmer Defoe, who's been batting second recently, and he's actually been hot of late. He can steal a base. If you own Correa in a league, you might want to look at what categories you actually need for the next 6 weeks. It may not be power. It might be more speed that you need. So maybe you want to take a guy who runs.
In which case, the injury actually is probably a great boon towards you because you would never think of getting rid of him because of everything else he gives you. But if you need steals, now you actually have an opening.
For Moncada, who you can't plug in the middle infield yet, but again, don't blame me. Jose Peraza might be out there in your league. Addison Russell, Brandon Crawford, And I'm keeping an eye on the Braves a little bit here, and maybe I shouldn't be, but they're clearly not going to play Dansby Swanson every day, having a rough season. Johan Camargo has been filling in, and they just got Sean Rodriguez back from the disabled list. He's been out all season after the car accident in the winter with his family in the car. Really scary, and there were concerns Rodriguez wouldn't be able to play at all this year. He's back now, and for people who don't believe in Sean Rodriguez, he had 18 home runs for last year's Tampa Bay Rays and only 300 at-bats. He could end up being the starting shortstop for Atlanta, and he could provide the pop that maybe Correa was providing for your team. Just keep an eye out on what Atlanta does here, because that shortstop switch situation with Swanson struggling so much is kind of interesting now. So,
yeah, he's definitely on the outs there in terms of this season, because they're still trying to compete for the playoffs. So as long as they haven't thrown in the towel, then there's no reason that they should put Swanson out there on the regular.
All right, ever so briefly from Tuesday night, a couple guys hit two home runs. Nicholas Castellano of the Tigers, who his periphery numbers tell us he should have been having a far better year than he's been having. He has only 14 home runs, a low batting average, but he hits the ball really hard, a lot of exit velocity here. Maybe the J.D. Martinez trade will signal something in him as he moves up a little bit in the lineup. Also, Chris Davis of Baltimore hit two home runs and knocked in six. I ask you, A.J., who would you rather have, Castellano or Davis?
I'd rather have Davis. I mean, Castellanos, if he gets hot and you know, suddenly gets that confidence and keeps it going, I guess he could possibly surpass Davis. But to me, he's no different than a Tommy Joseph, quite frankly, because of the incredibly high strikeout to walk rate that he's been putting up. And I mean, he does not walk. It's so frustrating. If he got on base a little bit more, I'd be more optimistic about him. So I would go with Davis.
And Michael Walker had a five-hit shutout at the Mets, striking a three-hit shutout, striking out eight. And I kind of got off the Walker train, or ship if you want, early last season when he was struggling so much. But in his last four outings, he's won all four, and he's lowered his ERA from 4.76 to 3.71, which is impressive. Now, his next three starts don't figure to be so favorable: at the Cubs versus Arizona with J.D. Martinez, at the Brewers. What are you doing with Walker here? Is he a guy you want to add now, or do you say, thank you for the last month, I'm moving on?
Yeah, I got him in my streaming category, so I'm not really all that high on him. It's a matchup-based thing. I think last night's game, which I did watch, part of the thing with when you play the Mets, especially as pitiful as their starting pitching has been, is that you get the lead very early, and that changes the way a starter approaches the game. When he takes the mound and he's already off 3-4 runs, he's going to pitch differently. And the Mets, the way they've been swinging the bat, certainly don't make you want to change the way you're pitching once you start on that. It's not normal, and it's not indicative of how a pitcher is going to pitch down the line. I would just throw out the start. I mean, take the win, take the, you know, the shutout innings, but it doesn't mean much as far as I'm concerned.
Walker versus Brad Peacock, Houston strikeout guy. Who would you rather have the rest of the season?
I'd rather have Walker, but that's really just because I don't really know where Peacock's going to fit in that rotation, and just how they're going to use their pitchers once everybody's back healthy.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is just different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, more than 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners to this fine show can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel.
Woo!
Not making that up, and I'm going to have a talk with Dop after the show, but that's K-A-R-A-B-E-L-L. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel.
Hey, buddy.
You did that.
I didn't do that.
You did that.
I didn't. That was the agency. They thought that Carabel would be a good one.
I can confirm that was not Dop and Deuce.
That was
right
not
there.
Me. No. What do you think I am, Eric? You think I'm just some, like, I can just make stuff up on the spot? You can't teach an old ship new tricks.
Kyle, do we have any questions?
Yeah, you do. Now we're cooking with ships, Eric. Sorry, now we're just making ship up.
Oh, man.
Let's talk to Kyle Sloopy.
Oh, there you go. We got a bunch of questions. We had a Michael Wacha name game all queued up, but you guys kind of ruined it by diving into him.
That's why I'm here.
No, yeah, you guys are...
to ruin things.
We'll give you either or here. Michael Wacha, Ian Kennedy, and his 4 straight quality starts.
I would... See, I don't like the next couple outings for Wacha. I'd have to look and see what Kennedy's next couple outings are, but... I mean, like, I just can't just all of a sudden trust a guy who for like a year and a half has been pretty lousy. Ian Kennedy's been pretty good, too. I can't imagine Ian Kennedy has to face the lineups that Wacha does. So, yeah, I'm going to actually take Ian Kennedy. AJ, you agree with that?
No, I'm going to stick with Wacha. I not necessarily anything more than streaming, but I think I probably trust him a little bit more, even with the opponents. Than Ian Kennedy, but you know, I still have Ian Kennedy as a Diamondback hangover going on there, probably.
Kennedy versus the White Sox Friday. That's pretty attractive. At Detroit next week, I like that. And then at Baltimore, I'm definitely taking Kennedy here over Wacha for the short term.
All right, one more Wacha one. We got Julio Teheran. Faye Adams is wondering who you'd rather.
Well, I don't think, AJ, we've mentioned before that you're not a big fan of Teheran this season, and he's not. I mean, he's been pitching better over the past month. Next outing at the Dodgers, I'll take a no on that. But after that, at the Phillies, I'll take a yes on that. And then home to the Dodgers. So two of his next three outings are not real attractive. Still take Kennedy and Wacha over Teheran right now, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I have Wacha ahead of him. It's not that that far apart, though. So I think it probably, again, they're both in the streaming range. It depends on the matchup. But obviously, if you're facing the Dodgers, I'm not going anywhere near you.
And Teheran has better road numbers and home numbers this season, but I just don't buy that as a thing. Atlanta, and we won't know this for at least, what do we need? Like 2 years of data to know that Atlanta's new ballpark is a hitter's park? Like Arizona, it's not going to be like Coors, but like people think it's this monster hitting park. I just think Teheran just had troubles at home, whatever it is. And maybe it's something personal. Who knows?
It's not a thing of the park, but it could be a thing of Teheran. So, I mean, it remains to be seen whether it's going to be a thing for the park. But right. If it's in his head, you know.
Remember, who was it? Was it Irvin Santana? I used to really struggle with the Angels and home games for like over a year. And he was asked about it. And he was like, there's nothing here. You know, nothing's happening. It's just, you know, whatever. It's random. That's what he said. And, you know, it didn't make any sense for him to just...
I wish more players felt that way.
Yeah. Well, they're very superstitious.
That they are. Creatures of habit in baseball, much like the podcast. We've got Solar wondering, Trey Mancini, he's only 25 years old, and his current 600 at-bat pace is 32 homers, 101 RBIs, and he's batting .306. Is he bona fide or bona facio, and what are you thinking for dynasty owners?
Well, the problem here, and I think this is what AJ would say, is he's a lot like the Tommy Joseph set. He's a first baseman, unexciting first baseman with pop, who shouldn't be hitting .306. I look at his minor league numbers, and he was doing it, but he wasn't. He's not walking at all. So it seems to me to be pretty unlikely they'll hit .306 moving ahead. Oh, look at that BABIP. That's an awfully high BABIP. A 6% walk rate with 25% strikeout rate. Contact rate, not impressive. He's playing regularly, but I'm not sure that'll continue in the future. I mean, if I said to you, AJ, Tommy Joseph versus Trey Mancini, I mean, does it even matter?
No, probably not. And I mean, the only thing that makes it matter somewhat is, you know, there is a DH for Mancini where he can stay in the lineup on those days when they just want to give him the day off. So from playing time standpoint, and I don't necessarily know that that's a good thing when that BABIP drops out and he suddenly starts plummeting in the batting average. But because he does have that out where he can stay in the lineup when he's not in the field, where Joseph doesn't have that, he'll play more. Like I said, I don't know necessarily, though, that that's a good thing.
You know, next year I could see Mancini, if we know in March that he's going to be a regular player, and remember, they have Davis at first base, so Mancini can play outfield or DH. If we knew for sure, I would say 30 home runs. Yeah, I could see that. It's not a guarantee, though.
No, not by any means. it, just like we were saying, ballparks need a while. So do ballplayers. I would wait for two seasons to three seasons even before I could say, yes, this player is what he is, and take it from there. Anyone can have a hot couple of months. And I'm not saying that's entirely what's happening here and that the bottom's going to fall out, but we just don't know, and there's no way to know.
All right, we got a similar question here from Rick. He's wondering if you're any more optimistic on Ryan Healy, also 25 years old, just played his 162nd game last night, and he's up to 32 homers and 91 RBI for his career. He wants to know why nobody thinks he's a top 100 player.
It's a similar reason. He's a right-handed batter like Mancini who isn't guaranteed playing time. It's true. I mean, even on a bad team, he's batting .259 with a .293 on-base percentage. We knew his numbers last season where he hit .305. We're not going to continue because of a high BABIP, a questionable contact rate, really low walk rate. When you're a right-handed hitter who refuses to take walks and you're only saving grace is power. I mean, they didn't even consider him to play third base. Remember in the preseason, they were like, who'd they add? Plouffe? It was like, he doesn't even have defensive value. I would be concerned that Healy falls into the exact same class as Mancini and Joseph, where you can't even be certain he's going to play regularly next year. Is there power? Yeah. Could he hit 30 home runs this season? Sure. He could hit 250.
Absolutely.
But,
you know. Absolutely. He's Tommy Joseph. He's Nick Castellanos. He's Josh Bell. Yeah. Although Bell walks a little bit more. But, they're all the same player to me right now.
Yeah, and there's just, and you know, in this new era where everybody's hitting home runs, I think batting average becomes more important. So the guys like Chris Davis of the Orioles, to me, was more ownable in seasons past than he is now. I just don't want to take on 220 hitters who hit 30 home runs anymore. I don't think Healy's 220. I think he's 240, 250. But 14 walks, 97 strikeouts. That doesn't paint a pretty picture.
And the days of Jack Cust having a lot of fantasy value are gone. And you can't, I think you're right there. You can't really ride these guys.
And how is Todd Frazier different than that? You know, I mean, like, I moved him out of my top 100 for that reason. I know he's proven, okay? But it's not like he's hitting for a ton of power, not doing anything else.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's the fact that at least he has a track record in the past of having the average be higher than it is. If it doesn't improve, then obviously no. Then he drops right back down to where those other guys are. For now, I still see even a glimmer of 245 batting average is enough for me to keep him in the top 100. But, you know, 210 is certainly not going to cut it.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that. He followed up that tweet with, am I crazy to like VR or Frazier less than Healy? So it sounds like you like Frazier for the track record, and that's about it for right now.
They're different. I mean, VR? Is that what you said?
Well, yeah. But over
players.
Healy. You like Frazier over Healy just because of the track record?
Yeah, but
the
track record's about the only reason right now to like Frazier over all these other right-handed hitters who don't hit for average.
True.
And, you know, I mean, like I said earlier, I mean, Nick Castellano could have more value than Frazier the rest of the year. Yoan Moncada, because of the steals, should have more value. This is a guy who's going to end up with hitting maybe .220 with 25 home runs. We're going to look at Todd Frazier next March and say, ugh, .225 with 25 home runs? That's it? That's all he could do? We're not going to be real excited about him.
But we also will know where he is in terms of, you know, lineup changes and ballpark factors and things like that. And we'll reassess. I think that's the thing with these older players who have a track record is like, yeah, they can slump for a while. And I don't react to them as knee-jerk as I would with a young player who comes up and just doesn't do it because I haven't seen them do it. That's my way of looking at it. And I'm happy to be wrong on a young player because I'll catch lightning in a bottle with young players because there's so many out there and I'm willing to take a chance on them where others aren't. But I'm also willing to fail on that. And I'd rather go with the veteran in terms of my, you know, they have the track record. When the bomb drops out, it'll drop out, and then I won't pick them anymore. But as long as they have the chance to recover and put up decent numbers for the rest of the year, why not give him the chance to fail?
And you know, it's also worth pointing out, Frazier's from New Jersey, from Toms River, right? Went to Rutgers. I've talked to him a bunch of times from the home run derbies, and he's a really nice guy. And it's certainly possible that coming home to the New York, New Jersey area will make him a better player. These are human beings. You know, family will be able to watch him every day. Maybe he can go home, stay with his parents, you know, one night. I don't know. I mean, like, that stuff does matter. But we've got now, like, a couple years of a really low batting average. So it would surprise me if he even batted 270 the rest of the season. Anyway, yeah, you know what? You might want to sell Frazier before he even plays for the Yankees. You could probably get Healy and a good pitcher for him. If you can do that, yeah, I would do that.
Absolutely, yeah. There's no reason to not swap somebody for someone who is of equal value if you can get some extra thing in a different category, you know, like a pitcher, throw it to the mix. I mean, why not?
I could not agree more. I'm glad you brought that up. Trading him before he plays for the Yankees, I think that's a savvy move. You brought up Castellanos in the Frazier Healy talk. John notes that he's heating up with a .774 slugging percentage in July. What's the second half ceiling? Is it higher than that of Kyle Seager?
I feel like we've talked about Castellanos a lot on the show. I think his ceiling is really, really high. Like, I can see him batting 300 and being a 30 home run guy soon. Because some of the hidden numbers here, I just don't want to give him too much credit for a couple days in Kansas City against pitchers who were struggling. I think there's really high upside here. And yes, I think there's Kyle Seager upside. But, you know, I can't really like, his BABIP is now down to 310. So this isn't BABIP that's fueling or hurting his batting average. I just think he's like a 260 hitter. That's what he looks like to me, but with more power than he showed. Do you agree with that?
You know, it's an interesting phenomenon, I think, that's happening here. We've been talking a lot about him because, you know, he's the guy who's still in Detroit. And it's J.D. Martinez goes, and everyone's like, well, who's left there? And all this attention gets focused on Detroit. And I think no matter what your opinion of him right now is, in terms of adding him to your team, I don't think you're going to get proper value for him. And so in that sense, he becomes someone that you can't add to your roster. So I wouldn't even look in his direction. If I had him, because there's all this attention on him, and he's, you know, he's the guy who's left, then maybe I do sell him. And it doesn't matter if it's a comp so much as just you'll be able to get so much value out of these guys who get left behind. We so often say, oh, you know, Martinez is going to Arizona. How does this affect Martinez? The value of Castellanos, even though it's not his position, it shouldn't impact him. Just perception impacts him. And I think that's something that can't be overlooked in fantasy.
Alrighty then, Andrew is in a dynasty frame of mind here. He's noticing significant improvements from Marisel Ozuna and Corey Dickerson. He's wondering if the growth has you buying long-term.
The growth of who?
Ozuna and Dickerson.
Oh. I mean, I see no reason why Ozuna and Dickerson are just going to suddenly stop hitting. You know, Ozuna just about hit another home run yesterday in the game I was watching. Phillies win, yay! Dickerson looks legit to me. I mean, he's still hitting for power. Maybe his problem was playing defensively. These guys look like they're not going to stop. Ozuna has a strong first half, second half split in his career, which I do think matters as opposed to like pitcher's home road. So maybe Ozuna is more likely to get tired as the season goes on for whatever reason. But like at some point, guys get out of that too. So I don't want to just assume that Ozuna is going to bat 230 the rest of the season. It's legit power. He has as good a shot as any of the other Miami outfielders to get traded, which would help him because that ballpark is huge. I'm not going to predict doom for Ozuna or Dickerson. Are you?
No, I'm not predicting doom. I mean, Ozuna is one of these guys who I just love. I just love watching him play. If I could have him in every league, I would. I think he's top 25 and will be top 25 for a number of years. His stats could drop off for a few weeks here and there, but I'm buying. With Dickerson, the jury's still out for me in terms of how I feel for the Dynasty League long-term, if he can keep up what he's doing now. But, I mean, he's still a top 40 hitter for me the rest of the way, and I'm not, like, selling on him. I'm so over-the-moon optimistic with Ozuna that the comparison here to me doesn't make any sense.
Oh, I like a hot take from AJ there with Ozuna. I'm writing that down in pen, AJ. I'm going to hold you to that. All right, we got.
Please do.
Yeah, Ozuna. I'm a fan. I like what you're saying. It's strong. I like it. All right, we got two quick hitters here. So round things out. Jordan wants to know who the most valuable Pirate outfielder is going to be the rest of the way.
I love that question. You know what? So we haven't really discussed Starling Marte at all. I love the fact that Pittsburgh had him in the leadoff spot after the 80-game suspension. I mean, like, Marte was going to be the lead of today's show until all this happened. We're mentioning him in the 40th minute or whatever. I think he goes back to what he was, hitting for average when he shouldn't because of his walk rate, stealing bases, which he'll definitely be more inclined to do as the leadoff hitter. But can we really pick him over McCutchen right now, the way McCutchen's been hitting? I got to say McCutchen, depends if he needs steals. See, that's the thing. Like, on the player rater, Marte, I think, will be number one of the Pittsburgh outfielders because, say he steals 15 bases the rest of the way, that'll be more valuable than what McCutchen does because McCutchen doesn't run. So I'm going to have to say Marte.
I have him at number 26 and number 31 with McCutchen at 26 in terms of my hitters going forward. This is, you know, on the assumption that Marte was coming back and he came back. So that's where I have him right now, and Blanco significantly lower than that. But I think they're going to be close. It becomes a categorical kind of thing here. What category do you need more? And if you need power, then McCutchen's probably going to help you a little bit more. If you need speed, Marte will help you more.
You know, I've been studying Polanco because I own Polanco in the Labor NL League, and I really need him to hit. I have a shot to win that league. I'm one of three teams in the top tier. And Polanco, I spent a lot of money in the auction on Polanco, like $27, and he hasn't come close to providing that value. And I've been trying to figure out why he's not putting up the numbers I expected. All I needed was something similar to last year. 22 homers, 17 steals. I didn't care about batting average with him. He's not going to come close to that. And I don't know why. This isn't about struggling against lefties. He has no homers against them. This isn't about walk rate. I mean, his strikeout rate's down from 20% to 13%. His contact rate is way up. It's almost like he's trying to get hits, but he's not trying to drive the ball. That's what it kind of looks like to me. He's only 25. He feels like a guy who could surprise us all and hit 30 home runs next year, even if he ends up like a 12 this year. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the home run fly ball rate is not nearly what it was last year, and he's hitting more ground balls. So you combine those two things together, and you get a little bit of regression in terms of the power numbers. But I don't think it's something that's so out of the line of where he's put off those breakdowns over the past few seasons that we can't expect it to just be anything more than an anomaly that'll go away at some point. But it might very well linger for a little bit this season. These things tend to come in you know, an off-season adjustment where, you know, he gets back and gets back to who he was.
Polanco does have a 1081 OPS in July, so maybe it's turning around. I think you stay the course there. I don't know if he's going to catch up to the other two outfielders, but for you, Eric, I think he can hang on a little bit.
You know what I always say? Like, of course, I'd like to win every league, and I'd like to win that league. It's a national league, and, you know, well, not national league like AL versus NL, but it's like, you know, throughout the country. It's kind of a big deal, and I've contended a bunch, and I've never quite gotten past it. Our friend Tristan Cockcroft's won that league in AL like three or four times, and, you know, things have gone right for him in September. He's very good at this. And, by the way, he'll be back soon for everyone listening. And, you know, for me, I've lost in the last day of that 12-team NL-only league with other fantasy industry experts twice. Once on a Jimmy Rollins home run, and once because, who was the pitcher? There was a pitcher, Mike Fetters, who I had for like safe relief innings. It was a long time ago.
You're not at all bitter, are you?
Not at all. He got lit up at Coors on like the Saturday before the season ended on Sunday. I lost like three spots in whip because of just Mike Fetters. And I lost.
I think I'm coining a new phrase here, Eric. You are the master of the stumble brag.
I'm not bragging. I mean, it's not good to lose.
That's what I'm saying. A stumble brag.
I want to win. It's not gonna affect my life if I win or I lose. I'm having fun. I like to contend. I like contending for 6 months. That's fun, you know? I mean, like, people overrate that. They get so intense about winning a league that they forget that you're supposed to enjoy the ride. The journey.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, the number of people who, when a double that a guy gets doesn't immediately get added to the statistics, they're like, can we add the double? Can we add the double? Chill out. The double will be there, guys. Hang out. I just relax a little bit. Enjoy this. This is supposed to be fun.
That's what I hear.
Alrighty, hot take. July 19th, Gregory Polanco will help Eric Caraboe win that league this year.
I hope you're right.
Last question. Philip wants to know if you have to speculate on saves the rest of the way. Trevor Rosenthal or Brad Brock?
I think Rosenthal gets the next save for the Cardinals. I don't know how he can't. I mean, Matheny just ruined that whole situation. What a joke. Right? I mean, I don't see how he can go back to O. Stop messing around with your lefty, Cecil. I think Rosenthal gets the next chance, keeps the job. I think Brock loses the job tomorrow, probably, to Britain.
Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't listen to Matheny when he said that that Rosenthal was going to get the next chance, but he wasn't, you know, he was going to give him a little bit of rest first because he had pitched all weekend long. So I'm not worried about that. He'll get the next chance, and it's his. I just think Matheny just isn't going to come out and say, he's my closer. He's just not the type of guy to do that. But I wouldn't look into anything about the fact that he didn't get the last save chance. He was going to get the rest.
And Brock could keep the job because Britton could get traded tomorrow, too.
Also, hey, they could all get traded. He's one of the guys who's been listed as, you know, Angelos has given permission to trade him.
Would you rather trade for, like, if you're a real team, you're the Cubs, would you rather have Britton or Brock? I mean, like, I can make the case for Brock. I'm not worried about him getting hurt.
Exactly. That's the case for him. But it depends on, you know, what are you using it for and how much you're giving up. You know, if you're not going to bring him in as the ninth inning guy and you're going to use him as an eighth inning guy, a setup guy, maybe you do take the guy who's had experience doing that, which is what Brock has experience in. You know, he's more of a setup guy if Britton's there. So, you know, maybe you use him. But, you know, it's all about how much you're willing to give up.
And for all the talk about the Cubs, they're only 2.5 games out of first. It changes that quickly in a weekend, in a series. Brewers have lost 3 in a row. Cubs have won 5 in a row. Now I almost can't see the Brewers winning the division. It's amazing how quickly this changes. But Brewers could catch the Rockies or Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks have lost 8 out of 10. The music stopped, which means we need to talk about Wednesday's schedule. There's a pair of games on ESPN. How about that? First game. 7 p.m. Eastern time, Mike Leake, and he's been leaking of late, not pitching very well, against Jacob deGrom. That seems a little one-sided. And at 10 p.m. Eastern time, it's Gio Gonzalez, who's having a fantastic season. He's fourth in the majors in ERA, and his strikeout rate over the past 6 weeks is through the roof. He's not facing Ricky Nolasco anymore, the major league leader in home runs, even though that's what it says here. It's actually Alex Meyer. He's really no better. So, lots of action on ESPN. 7 hours of baseball action. Don't miss it. There's a bunch of day games that have already started. Let's talk only about the night slate here. AJ, give me a hitter or a pitcher that you will be recommending to people.
This evening, I think, you know, with Chicago in flux, I'm going to give Kenta Maeda a chance here. I think that it's just going to take some time for that whole team to figure out who they are and everything and just shake off the clubhouse changes there. So tonight's a good night. I normally would not go for him. He's the one Dodger pitcher in that rotation I don't like, you know, on the regular. But tonight I'll let him go in there.
And Kyle, I believe you like a Dodgers hitter tonight against Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, I'm going Logan Forsyth. I like the platoon numbers. Rodon, very up and down to me. The Dodgers offense is rolling. I think Forsyth gets a piece of the action tonight.
All right, that's been our very long Wednesday show, but there was lots to discuss. We will be back, I believe, on Thursday to preview the long weekend. So please come back with us then. I want to thank AJ Mast doing a great job here. Also Kyle Soppy and Daniel Doppy and new closer Tyler Clippard. I'm Eric Carabel. Have an awesome day. Everything is awesome.